This is News in No Time. Ed Gordon on today's roundtable, the start of the Roberts confirmation hearings, and who will rebuild the Gulf? To discuss these issues, we're joined by Jeff Obafemi Carr, host of the radio show Freestyle. He joins us from Spotland Productions Company in Nashville, Tennessee. From Audio Post Studios in Philadelphia, Renee Amore, president of the Amore Group, and George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service, joins us today from Maryland. All right, folks, let's talk a little bit about first what we heard from Reverend Jackson just moments ago, and that is, and we are hearing this quite frankly across the country, that we are seeing continued ineptness, and I'm not going to point the finger where it's coming from, but we have trucks sitting with ice and food that aren't being dispersed. We have stories of people gathering goods and they are unable to get to evacuees. George Curry, when we continue to hear these stories, what does it say about the situation?
Well, we certainly can say it as ineptitude, and we can say it's been so far, it's been across the board. I mean, that's plenty of responsibility here. Everybody's pointing the finger at somebody else, and everybody's right because they all kind of messed this one up. It doesn't make any sense to a week later, more than a week later, that here we are, have food and supplies and not getting to people. I've never seen a debacle like this in my life. When you know in advance it's going to come, not a whole lot of notice, but you know. You have emergency measures in place, and you fail across the board. And this late in the game, we certainly shouldn't be having these kinds of problems.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, is it a surprise, as much a surprise to you as it is to George, that we're having in sheer numbers the kinds of problems, whether it be from the debit card debacle to, as I said, really food in some places beginning to spoil because for whatever bureaucratic stop that's put in place, we can't get it to evacuees?
I am just as surprised on some levels, and I'm also just devastated on the inside. I'm also pleasantly surprised, though. I'm not surprised at the government's response. These warnings have been coming for a long time, and they went unheeded, and we see in the aftermath what the results of that not heeding and not listening to predictions of what could happen during floods and hurricanes can do. But I'm also particularly surprised that those trucks are sitting there and not being utilized. And this has become something that has become a flashpoint of it's become a flashpoint for grassroots efforts. I just got literally 24 hours ago, I just got off a bus from a relief effort down in Louisiana, and we went down and actually dropped supplies directly with people who were in need of them. It took us a while to target who those people were and to find through phone calls and emails a place where we could actually make sure the services were delivered. But since then, in talking to the family of 21 people that we actually brought back to Tennessee to help serve, finding out the stories down there, it's been devastating. And there are places where people, grassroots efforts reach people. But by and large, people agree that the governmental structure has failed them miserably.
We should note that the truck drivers that Reverend Jackson mentioned just a few moments ago are FEMA-contracted truck drivers, and we hope on tomorrow's show to talk with one of them who is being paid a hefty salary a day, but he is angry because he feels he has committed himself to helping people, and as Reverend Jackson just reported to us, these supplies and food are sitting, they're standing, and they're helping absolutely no one. Renee, let me turn my attention to you and ask whether or not you believe, as the president gears up to make another swing through the Gulf region, his presence is going to be of any assistance in moving what prior to has been slow.
I think that, first of all, I'm just very sad in how things are just not moving. There's just definitely a lack of communication, definitely a lack of folks, you know, in the government across the board not doing what they need to do. I think with the president coming and seeing that these same things are happening, the trucks are still sitting there, food is spoiling, that will make a difference. But we shouldn't have to wait for the president to come and to make a difference. We should have those things moving. But I think that with people really not communicating in the whole government level, that's why there's issues. But I'm glad that grassroots folks are making things happen, making things move. I have staff as we speak in New Orleans who are pulling bodies out that are very upset, not really having any direction. And basically, we've been giving them direction by trying to talk to government officials to make some things happen. And I think the more folks like the panel members and other folks that are coming into play, the faith-based folks moving in and helping, that's what's making a difference. That's what's really saving people and helping folks.
Jeff, let me raise this question. We heard it from Colin Powell, who did his first interview since leaving the Bush administration with Barbara Walters on last Friday. One of the things he said, and we heard it on this program from Bruce Gordon, CEO of the NAACP, is that he felt the recovery effort, the slowness that occurred more because of the economic and class situation of these people versus race. I find it, quite frankly, considering that black America is disproportionately poor, hard to divorce the two. I'm wondering, when you hear that kind of language, what you think?
It's got to be tough. I'll venture out and say this. It's got to be tough to be Colin Powell. Obviously, the man has a conscience and is to some degree an independent thinker of sorts. Yet there exists this duality in his spoken thoughts and actions that are kind of Du Boisian in nature, the old conflict spoken of in the souls of black folk, that struggle between being both an American and a Negro, in that terminology, both sides equal, yet in conflict, and that dogged strength keeping them from being torn asunder. On one hand, he agrees that there was a failure on all levels of government, but there's something that prevents him from saying that it's about race. And that's what we hear, that it's about economics. In a city that's almost 30% poverty and almost 30% black, I cannot believe in my soul that if this had happened in Silicon Valley, or if this had happened in Bellmead and Nashville or Brentwood or somewhere very affluent, that the response from the government would not have been quicker. And I think that on one level, we have to now move beyond blame to fix things. We also have to know the source of a disease to provide a cure. And these people were poor, overwhelmingly black. And when you talk to them hand to hand, face to face, and you hear their stories of tapping on people's shoulders and police and military and trying to get assistance and having people turn their backs on them, I just don't believe that this would have happened had it happened in an affluent part of white America.
George, we don't have to assume that the two have to be mutually exclusive, do we?
Absolutely not. In fact, we have a disproportionate number of African Americans are poor, so we know that. We know that half of the black population in New Orleans were poor. But going back to this whole issue of how this is viewed through the prism of race, I mean, that's why that Pew study that was issued Thursday, Pew Research Center for the People in the Press, that showed that two-thirds of African Americans feel that the government would have reacted faster had the victims been white. But a larger margin, 77% of whites, said race would have nothing to do with it. I mean, here you are looking at a natural disaster in two different views. But at the same time, another finding was that most black Americans felt that this said something, made a statement about race. Most whites felt differently. So it's tough to even have a meaningful discussion when we are really looking at this thing from totally two different views altogether. And this is something you wouldn't think to have any kind of tinge of race. We're talking about a national disaster, but there's this wide gulf there. And I really fear that we're not going to really bridge this unless we start acknowledging it, because it's hard to even have a discussion based on these kind of differences.
Renee, it seems that the Bush administration is reeling in the wake of Katrina. One of the criticisms that we're hearing now, and it was again raised moments ago by Reverend Jesse Jackson, are the companies that have been tapped already to help in the rebuilding and recovery effort in New Orleans have great ties to the Bush White House. And certainly one of the subsidiaries of Halliburton, a company, Kellogg Brown and Root, have been tapped. Another, the Shaw Group, all ties to Dick Cheney and George Bush. One would think that the White House would be careful in terms of perception right now. Do you think that they should concern themselves about this? Or I'm sure their argument would be these are the best groups to handle the job.
That's definitely their argument. They definitely have to be concerned about it. They definitely have to look at it. I've talked to several people, that work in the White House that are concerned about it, because perception's reality for a lot of folks. Already you're feeling that this whole disaster is worse and people aren't doing things because folks are black. That's number one. Number two, they're feeling like the relief effort is not happening. Number three, you're talking about people being refugees, and these are African-American folks, people of color, that are United States citizens. So there's a lot of issues that need to be looked at, and in particular, who's getting the contract. Yes, they may be the best folks, but did you go out and look at for some other folks? And that's been my concern, and that's what I've told people. And we definitely need to be concerned, because we have to look at what is really happening. Can we get some other people in there to do the job? And maybe they are qualified, but has somebody else been asked to look at those folks?
And the answer to that is no. It's the same problem you have in Iraq. No, this is political incest is what this is. And you have these no-bid contracts that go to political insiders, and it happens on the Democrats, and it happens on the Republicans.
Exactly.
And it's time for the end.
And it's both sides of the aisle, and it's going to continue to happen.
Jeff, the idea that cronyism, quite frankly, is a mother's milk in Washington, D.C., this kind of thing is nothing new to this administration. It's been going on for years through political parties, whether it be Democrats or Republicans. When do Americans really stop feeling impotent and demand that things like this change? Some have already made the argument, and we'll see further examination whether cronyism put Michael Brown at the head spot in FEMA and certainly caused part of the concern of the aftermath.
I think we're heading, and I'll say this again, I'll stick my head out and say it, I think we're heading for a serious reckoning in America. How that will manifest itself, I cannot say that I know. I don't know if it will manifest itself politically. I don't know how it will manifest, if it will manifest itself with people protesting in the streets, kicking people out of office. I don't know how it will manifest, but we're heading toward a reckoning. I talked with an 86-year-old gospel singer named J. Robert Bradley, and Dr. Bradley always talks about this song, and it goes, "You can't do wrong and get by." And we've been doing wrong as a country and getting by. $9 billion, not million, but $9 billion has been spent alone on Halliburton, given to Halliburton. The Pentagon released a study that said $1.3 billion of those funds are questioned and $422 million are unsupported just for Halliburton's role in Iraq alone. This buddy-buddy cronyism that's going on now is robbing the people of New Orleans proper the opportunity to participate in rebuilding their own home. And this is eventually going to come to a head someday. I just hope the powers that be realize that you can't make this better by continuing to throw money to your friends and relations. The people are eventually going to revolt and turn on this, and I think America's headed in that direction.
George Curry, when you see this occurring, one has to start to question whether or not, as Jeff alluded to just a moment ago, getting in the streets, marching, making demands is the right thing to do at this time. We just, again, heard Reverend Jackson suggest the possibility of, quote, marching on FEMA. When do you think that you run the risk of further hindering the recovery time, but moving government to action?
Well, I think you got to use whatever means you can to move the government. But this whole idea of America's rising up, I disagree with my brother Jeff a little bit on that one. I just don't see it. I think people have become so disappointed with the federal government and kind of a sense of powerlessness, which is so sad because you don't need that when you just see it. But the politics part is going to be there. But the problem is, you know, I expect some political patronage. I mean, that's a system. But I don't expect with FEMA, an organization responsible for saving lives, that five of your top eight administrators would have direct political appointments and experience with the party that's in power. I mean, that's when it just goes overboard. I just don't see it. But I think you got to keep all your options open. The part about marching, you need to do more than march to solve this problem.
All right. Let me turn our attention to Washington, D.C. before we close out today, and that is the kickoff today of the confirmation hearings of John Roberts, expected to be when questioning starts on tomorrow. Contentious. We're going to hear opening statements, including a statement from John Roberts. But do we expect anything beyond posturing by politicians to make a stance here, Renee?
I don't see, you're not going to see anything different. I don't think that the Democrats have anything, and they've tried on Roberts. And so I think he's going to have some tough questions. He'll answer them, and I think he'll really get over, you know, the 70 votes, and he'll make it. I think that people will posture. But I also think that the Bush administration made the right decision, because this is a guy that doesn't have a lot of baggage. He comes to the table. People like him pretty much on both sides of the aisle. So I don't think he'll have any issues.
Yeah, I would agree with
you. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, George.
There will be issues. Now, I don't think there'll be enough to disqualify him. I mean, he has all the credentials. But there are certain questions about the role of government, Congress, the courts, the separation of power, privacies, Roe v. Wade. There are a lot of substantive questions that people will really be trying to gauge his philosophy and how he feels about presidents. I mean, these are really substantive issues that we'll be delving into. But he's an expert. Remember, he advised Senator O'Connor not to answer substantive questions,
right,
saying it might influence how you're going to answer. I don't expect them to get a whole lot of answers out of him.
Hey, Jeff, do you expect Democrats to say and concede that Roberts, in Renee's words, doesn't have enough baggage to ask the right questions, but to assume that he is going to pass muster and be confirmed, but really key in on the second appointment?
Yeah, I think so. That's probably where their best hope lies.
Right.
Robert's not—he's not dirty enough to really attack on many levels, and that's unfortunate for them. You asked the other question in terms of experience as a person who looks at this issue from the outside. What's the value of a person who put on a robe 3 years ago, basically, being now elevated to the Supreme Court? I know that you couldn't spend 3 years reporting on being a TV reporter and be elevated to head of a network. You can't spend 3 years being a priest and be elevated to Pope. But you can spend 3 years on a bench and be elevated possibly to head of the Supreme Court simply because you have a clear enough plate for there not to be a big debate. And then you add to it the overarching theme of the devastation in New Orleans right now, and you have a big enough cloud of distraction going on to make sure that you'll be in there at 50 years old and have the opportunity to influence policy for a long time. So perhaps the Democrats now should focus on trying to look at that second appointment after some of this dust clears and see if they can at least maintain some balance.
The irony of this was initially that they thought this would be the way it would play out, that he would replace Rehnquist. But O'Connor, Senator O'Connor, surprised him by resigning earlier. Now it flips back. This basically is not the big real fight because basically you're exchanging a conservative for a conservative. So you still got the 5-4 margin, theoretically.
Right.
The second one is going to be the one important.
The second one will be
All right, Jeff,
the issue.
I'm sorry, Renee, I got to stop you there. We are up against the clock and out of time. But Jeff Obafemi Carr, Renee O'Moore, and George Curry, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.